All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of this podcast, Artificial Talk. I'm your host, Patrick, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Tristan.
Hello.
Today we're going to talk about a few different topics that I think are pretty interesting. Firstly, we have a grandmother who is being fined for posting Facebook photos of their grandchildren because it violates GDPR privacy rules. Because I think the story is something along the lines of, like, the grandmother posted an image without the consent of the parent, since the children are under legal age, so it's in charge of the legal guardian. And since the mom asked for her to take it down and it didn't, the grandmother didn't, they went to court for it, and so now the grandmother has to pay a fine of $50-ish if she, for every day that she fails to take the photos down. So I think this is kind of an interesting concept, like, in terms of privacy rules, because I don't think I've ever heard of a court case that has done something like this before, right? Have you?
So, this is, it's not the first year that the GDPR has been up, like, as a law in the EU, but I do believe this is probably the first time it's been, like, fully enforced, because... Yeah, because when they actually, when this law came about and, you know, it got approved and all that sort of thing, the whole point was more or less to protect individuals from, like, companies intruding. Like, for example, Google knowing your location or Facebook knowing everything about you, basically, the idea was that this law could protect your privacy. But this is kind of, this judge basically interpreted the law as also being able to protect, I guess, your individual rights as well from other individuals. So in this case, the grandmother posting up pictures of her grandkids, but her mother disagreeing with that, and since the mother's legal guardian, it's kind of brutal, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, I guess, and this was on Facebook, too, as sort of a other thing, too. This was on Facebook, so, and, you know, it isn't Facebook's job to dictate whether or not you can post things, but if the EU says you have to do it a certain way, then it's kind of, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy, honestly, that the law got interpreted this way, though, that I guess a daughter can sue her grandmother over her children being posted, though.
So yeah, I mean, back on what you said about it being brutal, I kind of have to agree. Like, it's crazy that, one, the law was interpreted like this. And I think it has a lot of benefits, in my opinion, because I'm a little bit of a privacy freak sometimes. So it is reassuring to know that I can, like, if someone posts a picture of me that I don't want up, it's possible that maybe if I was in Europe, I could have them take it down because it's my likeness or whatever. But, like, it's absolutely brutal because it's someone's own, like, daughter just going after them for posting a picture of their grandchildren.
Actually, yeah. Do you mind if I ask you a question, though? Put you on the spot? So, sure. Neither of us are parents. But I'm curious, if you had a kid and, you know, your parents were posting pictures of them on Facebook, public to the world, you know, they don't understand the settings to make them only friends, it's full public pictures, would you ask your parents to take those pictures down? And if they didn't, would you be willing to bring them to court like this, though?
Personally, if I had kids and my parents were taking photos of them, as long as we talked about it beforehand, like, they told me that they were going to post these pictures on Facebook, like, just literally, like, okay, I'm gonna post them on Facebook later, that's fine with me. I wouldn't really have an issue with it. And, like, my only issue would be, like, having them online at such a young age, depending on how old they are, because that kind of freaks me out a little bit, is having your entire life documented online,
right?
But I would never take my parents to court over that. I would just tell them, like, hey, it's my personal belief that my kid should not have any like information on the internet or like a public image of themselves until they're like, I don't know, 13 or whatever, right?
Right.
And so, like, at that point, and if they take it down, they take it down. If not, I'll respect their wishes, you know? Do you think you would have, like, the same sort of opinion, or, like, do you think you'd go about it in a different way?
I kind of agree with you. I don't think I would take my parents to court, per se. I think maybe if they didn't take it down, I might, you know, try to find another way around. Maybe get Facebook to take it down through their policies and all that sort of thing. Because, yeah, that's a hard one, because I think, as you said, I totally agree, where it's like, especially if you have your kids, you may not want pictures of them on the internet. You might want to preserve that little bit of privacy for not only yourself, but your kids down the line, if, especially, you know, if you just don't want them on the internet, as you said. So I think I wouldn't sue, but I feel like I would try to find another way if I really didn't want my kids on the internet, sort of thing, if that makes sense.
All right. Interesting. I guess, speaking of privacy and stuff, I think you know more about this. You know way more about this than I do, but Google Messages is now having end-to-end encryption for RCS.
So, for the uninitiated, I'll start kind of with the background context. RCS is the messaging platform that's attempting to replace both SMS and MMS, which, if you've ever used an Android phone or if you're on an iPhone and seeing green bubbles, that's basically what those are. And RCS is supposed to be like the iMessage of Android, if you want to look at it that way. So in the past, a big sort of issue with, I won't call it an issue, it's just been a ideological difference with RCS versus iMessage, is probably our best example, has been that it goes through carriers. And because of that, there was really no way to enforce encryption. So like basically, or end-to-end encryption specifically. So when you send a message, for example, if I send a message to Patrick using RCS, it basically meant that any person that happened to catch the message in the middle or anything like that, they could potentially read that message without any trouble at all. Whereas if we both use iMessage, for example, or any other, like WhatsApp, for example, even if they managed to grab the message, they wouldn't be able to read it without our keys to unencrypt the message. So Google hasn't actually announced anything about end-to-end encryption in RCS, but it does look like some, you know, sort of like a kind of code readers that go in between the lines of the code did find that it looks like Google might be preparing to have some sort of encryption in specifically Google Messages with RCS functionality. And that would basically mean that end-to-end encryption might be a possibility with RCS, which would mean that your messages would be a lot more secure. So, kind of cool, and something that a lot of people have been waiting for. Apple in particular, back when RCS first came out, was actually against supporting it, specifically because it did not support encryption. So it could be an interesting step in a different direction than before.
Yeah. But, do you think this is going to have any, like, impact, I guess, on iMessage then? Like, if they're going to have to adapt to this carrier, what do you think is going to happen to the app? Do you think there's going to be any, like, because there's, like, I don't know how they would maybe deal with the different format or how they would update it. Or if they would, you know?
Yeah, so RCS is a interesting sort of case on its own. Like, so iMessage, as we used as an example before, goes through Apple servers to actually get to another iPhone. So like that's why you have the ability to just send messages without actually having to have like a SIM card in your phone. You can do that because iMessage doesn't actually adhere to carrier standards. RCS, on the other hand, does adhere to carrier standards. The carriers are the ones that have to enable RCS. Like my understanding is basically Google forcefully enabled it in Google Messages this past year because not enough carriers were supporting it, or they had the hardware in place, they just didn't activate it, and then Google basically said, yeah, we're flipping the switch without listening to you, was my understanding of it. But that's kind of a tough one. iMessage has been one of those things that carriers don't like. And actually, WhatsApp, iMessage, Facebook Messenger, Instagram Messenger, like any sort, or Snapchat, any messenger that is outside of the standard texting ring has been heavily disliked by the carriers because they don't have any way to charge you for it, or companies for it, as it were. So RCS at the current moment goes through the carriers, and I'm not entirely sure how Google would go about encrypting it. Specifically because if they end-to-end encrypt it, that implies, I guess, that they're going to, in this case, I guess they would rely on the devices themselves to do the encryption and not the not sort of the handshake in between, because I don't think the carriers are going to want that. At least in my thought, I don't know. Maybe they would be okay with it, but it does seem like that seems to be the plan, though. It would cut out a lot of the in between. Like, for example, a carrier being able to read your messages. That's actually been a very common issue with a lot of people who don't like carriers. Mm-hmm. Because they sell your data. They're known for doing that.
Right.
So this would essentially cut them out of your messages entirely if they did it the way that Google is trying to do it, it looks like.
Hmm.
So I don't know though. It's a tough sell because first of all, you have to get everyone to install the app, Google Messages specifically on Android. And Google in the past hasn't been very good at that. So I don't actually know how, to answer your question, I don't know how much of an effect this is actually going to have when a lot of people are already using different messaging apps and they're having trouble getting everyone to get onto one messaging app.
Yeah. Interesting. Especially because, like, I don't know. It's just, I don't know if the carriers will take on based off of what you said.
Like, so let me ask you, have a Android phone. What's your messaging app of choice?
I used Textra for a while, and then I switched to Pulse messaging, I think. And then I switched back to Tetra, and then it started dropping the ball on me because there was, like, an issue with MMS on my phone for a while, so I swapped back to Samsung messages.
Oh, interesting. Oh,
yeah,
interesting.
I have a journey. I have a journey, dude.
That is always the fun of Android, is switching around all your apps, because usually there's not one app that's, like, amazing enough to stay with. But Samsung Messages in particular is based off of Google Messages, though. Like, it's source code.
Right, yeah.
So I wonder if this would be, like, a Google Messages thing only, or if, like, any app that's based off of the API could use it?
That's a really good question, because I don't know. Do you think that they would kind of be sort of, like, monopolizing RCS if they didn't allow that? Especially because, like, it's only their app, even though other people are using the code. Or would it just kind of be able to get by, like, iMessage, I guess?
So, the one advantage iMessage had, though, was the fact that no matter what iPhone you're using, you can't actually switch messaging apps. Like, iMessage is the default. There is no way to change it to a different app.
Right, right.
That's part of the that's one of the things of when you get an iPhone, it just works, because quite literally you will never be able to switch it even if you want to. The thing with Google Messages in particular is for a lot of different manufacturers, Samsung is a great example, is they built their own messaging app. LG had their own messaging app up until like 2 years ago when they finally took on Google Messages. But there's a lot of other companies who prefer to either build their own messaging app or they outright just don't. They just use Google's, hopefully. But it's kind of a weird question, especially with how all of that's going to piece together. Like, end-to-end encryption generally requires the same apps to communicate with each other. Like, for example, Signal. Signal communicates with only other Signal apps. You can't send the message beyond Signal. Same with WhatsApp. WhatsApp can't communicate to other, like Facebook Messenger, for example. It can only communicate to WhatsApp, at least until Facebook encrypts end-to-end encrypts everything, and then everything's linked somehow. But
yeah,
that's kind of the rough. Is Google gonna, like, monopolize RCS? I don't think so. And the only reason I don't think so is because they've kind of set the precedent that carriers deal with RCS, the RCS side of things, but Google will kind of deal with the user-facing part of it, if that makes sense. So, like, for example, honestly speaking, like, Apple or Microsoft, when they develop their phones, they could potentially bring RCS on board as a feature, but I think it would be difficult for Google to monopolize it. They could potentially monopolize the end-to-end encryption part of RCS. I could see that, maybe. Because if they're the only ones that have it, and then all of a sudden, you know, you don't want miscommunications of encryption across devices, that kind of ruins the whole point. But RCS itself, I feel like, is too, how would you say, like, disorganized, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Speaking of Google and monopolizing stuff, there's an antitrust suit going on for them, right?
Yep.
Or being opened, at least right now. And that's because of, I think, searching monopolies? Like a monopoly on a search engine or something?
So, yeah, and we're, be clear, we're, neither of us are lawyers here, so we're going to be kind of putting pieces together here as we go. But my understanding of it is basically the DOJ, known as the Department of Justice here in the United States, kind of like our big hammer against law stuff, is drafting up a antitrust suit for against Google. And my understanding, the reason is because Google is essentially they've essentially monopolized the advertising market outside of Facebook. And I guess they've kind of been putting down competition on their search engine through their advertising controlled market, essentially. So this is kind of an interesting one, and it's more or less because if you didn't know, if you look up, go to google.com right now and just type in anything you want. You can type in Apple, you can type in Hi, you can type in Google itself. You can literally type in anything. At the top of the page, there's always an ad for something. Like if you type in Google, the first ad is generally going to be google.com or something Google related, because that's how their ads work. So what this is alleging is basically that Google has been kind of playing with those marketing positions and kind of sending them to other places. And while, you know, they're only drafting it so far, they actually haven't taken any action against Google. I mean, Google owns basically the entire world, right?
Yeah, they have a lot of revenue right now, so they could go to court for probably literal, like, maybe a decade and just still have money to fund it. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting, though, if Google was broken up in an antitrust suit, though. That would be, I don't think that's going to happen, but it would be kind of interesting to see that happen. I mean, what would you, I guess, like, because Google itself is just one company in Alphabet.
Right.
It's not, like, the main company anymore. So, how would you break up Google?
I mean, I'm a Alphabet. What does Alphabet exactly take care of? I think they're more of, like, the non-search engine side of stuff, right?
They're like the, it's hard to say. Like, so Google is kind of like the tech, like, the search engine, Android, all that sort of thing, whereas Alphabet has a lot of, like, it has Google under it. It also has, like, Waymo, the self-driving company. It's got Project X, which I believe is something else now, but I'm going to continue calling it that, which is basically just, I think it was medical, like, chemical medical stuff. It just basically has a bunch of other, I guess you can call it, like, subsidiaries that do different things. Nothing specific, but they do all sort of different things. Like, it kind of is like the management. If you wanted to compare it to a big company, it's like the management for all the different departments, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's hard to break it up because, like, the specific thing that they're targeting is a search engine, and you can't break up the search engine. Like, that's it.
But I guess you could break up the advertising part from the search engine. Like, split them into different companies, I guess?
That is true. You could split it between different companies. Because, I mean, Alphabet has all these other, like, subdivisions. If you split all those up, and you have Google split from its ad revenue, and the ad revenue gets spread out to all the different subsidiaries that are beneath Alphabet, you could, in theory, that could be one way to break it up.
I guess I'm also curious. So I think they're only suing Google, though.
Yeah.
Because
so then,
are they suing Alphabet?
No, let me see. I'm pretty positive. Oh, no. It's against specifically Google. but it's Alphabet Incorporated's Google.
Oh, I see. So they're, so they're going to have to, they're suing essentially Alphabet for Google's misdoings.
Yes.
Okay.
That is the implication I'm getting from the statement.
Okay, I see, I see. I mean, it's going to be an interesting case. Like, we were talking about this a little bit earlier, but it sort of reminds me of when the government also went after Microsoft for basically monopolizing the browser market with Internet Explorer. And we're kind of back to that again, considering the fact if you're not using Google, you probably, you're either very privacy conscious and you use DuckDuckGo, or you just use Yahoo or Bing, maybe.
I mean, startpage.com also exists, but like, I think I might be the only person in the world who uses that. And even then, like, I don't even use it on my main computer. I only use it on my phone. So, yeah, no, like, no one, everyone uses Google. There's a reason why we tell someone to Google something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I do have a funny story. Have you ever, so on your Google account, have you ever like gone into like, do you keep the advertising, personalized advertising turned on or off?
I don't know, actually.
So
I haven't checked.
If your personal advertising is actually turned on, this is kind of funny. It actually, what it'll start doing is it'll start building like a profile view for targeting ads towards you. And if you just leave it on for like, not even joking, like a week, it will have put together like at least your age, and then like what you like, and then like a few of the things that you've done. Like, it gets, and if you keep this on for months, it builds this super extensive list of who you are and like what you like to look at on the internet, so it can target ads towards you. It's kind of amazing.
I don't know if I'd call that amazing.
I mean,
I'd call it more terrifying, but
it's terrifying, but it's terrifying in that way where you look at it and you're kind of like, this is kind of cool, very scary, but also kind of like, wow, they know me so well, it's not even funny. Like, it's one of those type of things, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm.
And then kind of speaking of privacy stuff, like go back to Google a little bit. So Patrick and Robert were doing the podcast, they actually mentioned that I was trying to get out of Google's whole system. So I'll just tell you straight off the bat, it is difficult. It is, I don't call it impossible. I don't think it's impossible, but it's so incredibly hard to do. And also, as sort of a side note, if Google gets broken up, and it's more than just their advertising and search engine, it might be really difficult to continue using Google stuff. Like, look at it this way. Like, for example, you have Gmail, right? And you get an email for an event, for example. That event automatically appears on your Google Calendar, and then automatically your Google system picks it up and will spam it to you across pretty much everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Think of how difficult that's going to be to synergize if anything happens where Google is forced to be split up in any way. That whole synergy no longer works.
I mean, maybe, no, you're right, because if they get split up, they can't, like, really communicate to each other, right? They can't essentially just have you sign up for the same email on every website and then your account's linked, right?
Oh, you just brought up a good point. Yeah, I guess you might, oh my goodness, if you had to have a different account for every Google service, that would just be...
Or they just wouldn't link on paper, right?
I mean, maybe, but the whole point of antitrust, I guess, is that it doesn't end up linked. Like, what's a good example? Like, when Big Oil here got split up during, from Rockefeller's era, whatever that was, I remember in particular, so the companies themselves, like Chevron, Mobil, and the two other ones, I'm not going to remember their name right now, they weren't allowed to be one company. But I think basically all the money ended up getting funneled back to Rockefeller at the end of the tunnel sort of thing. But they couldn't be the same company, I guess, was my understanding. Like, I guess maybe they would still be allowed to. Well, no, they had to be competitors. I don't know how that would work, though, in sort of the antitrust thing, though, right?
Right. I actually, yeah, no, because how could you make everything that synergizes right now become competitors?
I mean, is there different? I'm not too aware of Google's business model. Is there different? What you call it? Is there different like advertising, like brands under Google, or are they're all just under Google, right?
I think they're all under Google, like as AdSense or whatever, right?
Yeah. So maybe the way they would do it, maybe they would force Google to give up some of its advertising to other companies.
That could happen as well.
Or allow other companies to advertise like on Google. Like what I mean by that is like instead of Google targeting all the ads on Google, let's say like Yahoo could purchase like an advertising block and they could advertise on Google through their own advertising network.
That's kind of a good point.
That'd be kind of weird.
It would be really weird, but I can see it happening.
Again, assuming that this suit actually ends up in court at some point.
Right. That is assuming that everything goes to plan. Right.
But I mean, it's raising a lot of questions. But yeah, so back to what I was saying though, also part of the reason I'm trying to get out of the whole Google system is because Google collects everything to kind of sort of level out that whole advertising point of they build your profile. And it's hard. It's really hard. Like, you know what's, it's funny. Do you know what's one thing I actually took for granted from Google that I never even thought about? Was the sign-in for Google.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you get on the website, and instead of having to create a whole new profile with all your information and all that, the sign-in with Google thing just lets you in, use your Google account.
Right.
Don't have that anymore.
Yeah, so you have to make a separate email. You have to make a separate account with an email and a password for every site. Because I'm assuming you're not going to log in with Facebook.
Absolutely not. I.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. I don't even blame you.
Yeah, like, Google's bad, but Facebook is, like, actually the worst. Like, I've made it very clear on the show, I don't like Facebook, and I don't respect their business practices in the slightest. Like, don't get me wrong, I think what their whole company did was revolutionary and still is. But also, it's kind of just scumbaggy at this point. Like, it's just bad.
Yeah.
And especially after the Cambridge Analytica scandal, and we could go down the list of everything Facebook's done wrong. They're trying to be encryption now. I don't know what that means. I still haven't figured out 2 years down the line what that means, but they're trying. I will say if one thing Facebook does well, their advertising is excellent, on point, and it makes you cry. And that's just, their marketing team is A+, but it's still bad. Yeah. But, like, so I've kind of gone between Apple and Microsoft services in particular, because if you actually kind of look at it, those are the two giants of the four tech companies. Like, Google and Facebook are huge, and Amazon. I should throw Amazon in there as well. They're actually bigger than Facebook.
Yeah.
They are the two oldest and the two largest of all the large tech companies that currently exist. And because of that, their business models are entirely different. At the moment, they could change down the line. Both those companies could say, well, yeah, we're going to sell ads now. But at the moment, it looks like they're not looking to do that. And at least from sort of perspective of Microsoft and Apple, is they're both trying to get their own little sign-in badges. Like, Microsoft has the sign-in with Microsoft now. Apple has sign-in with Apple. So, you know, those are slowly coming along. Kind of, not really. It's taking a long time, but they're coming. And that's been a sad thing. Gmail has been a severe loss. Spam filters on every other email are terrible. I'm just going to say it. They're all bad. And everyone really? Should... Yes, they're... So, like, for example, there is this... I don't know why it is. There's this spammer who just likes sending basically ads for housing insurance, but you know they're scams. Like, they look like scams. They're just bad emails. Google caught it pretty much 99% of the time. I rarely, if ever, saw those emails. As soon as I switched to, I go between iCloud and Outlook, iCloud never catches it, straight up. It's just bad. And Outlook catches it like 50-50.
And wow.
Yeah, it's not great.
The spam filter. Pretty bad.
Yeah, especially when you're comparing, Gmail is the standard of email. Well, I think we can both agree, right? Regardless of what we can Google.
It is 100% the standard.
But yeah, their emails aren't up to par. The calendar, Outlook's contact system is surprisingly bad for mobile operating systems. So, for example, what I do, I have one contact, and it is literally just for security codes. Like, you know, those little text codes, the 6-pin codes you get to log into stuff, right?
Yeah.
What I do on my phone is I have one contact that is just filled with all those numbers, so it only appears in one, basically one long string of text messages, so it's not spread out all over the place on my text messages.
Okay.
Outlook doesn't let you put more than like 20 numbers in a single contact. Don't know why.
Interesting.
You just can't do it. Both Apple and Google let you do that, but you know, that one requires you to go to Google, and the other one requires you to use Apple's contact system. So, go figure. Also, calendars are just bad. I don't understand why anyone can't get Google's calendar system to work. Like you know how in Google calendars you share, it just works. Everyone accepts, everyone declines, it works. You could share entire calendars with people. You can't do that. Apple does have something similar, but it's not nearly as nice and fleshed out. And Outlook is Outlook just has syncing problems. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the fact that I use Apple stuff occasionally and then go to PC stuff. Nothing syncs on Microsoft's calendar. I don't know why.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I mean, like, I don't know if Microsoft can get away with that Slack, dude, because Microsoft, like, Microsoft is about as big, if not as big as Google, right? They're like, on the same level.
No, they're much bigger.
Yeah, then why can't they get their calendar to sync, dude? I get it. Though, to be fair, Apple and Windows both also have an operating system that's, yes, like desktop-based, not, like, phone-based. Microsoft tried that, but we all know how that ended.
And I'll be fair a little bit to Microsoft. I don't use Outlook as a calendar because, in my mind, my calendar app and my email app are separate. It's just my mentality. I don't know why, just how I think. So I always default to having a second calendar app. And for some reason, no matter which one I use, they just won't work with Outlook. Outlook's own app might work great, but I don't use it for calendar. So,
okay. Huh.
Just be aware of that. And also, part of the reason I use Outlook is because, and cool thing about Outlook compared to Gmail though, Outlook will actually allow you to use the push setting in the default Apple Mail app. So, yeah, like Gmail only lets you use Fetch. It's stupid. And Google should feel ashamed of themselves. But yes.
All right.
So that's my rant about services from all these big tech companies.
Your rant about how Google has a lot of like services that are really hard to live without, but there are no other good options from tech giants, really.
I'm not going to jump back on the rant train, but Outlook is okay, but it needs to be more consumer friendly. That's the best way I can put it.
Yeah. Still, Gmail just blows everything out of the water, and it's so disappointing to see that no one else has ever like stepped up to the plate and tried to they have tried, but none of them have really caught up to Gmail.
No, not even close yet. Like, yeah. Yahoo, from my understanding, has actually gotten decent, but I'm not going to Yahoo. I'm gonna be honest with you.
I can't imagine going back to my AOL account and actually using AOL. Right? Like, no. That just seems like a website that was just ancient. It's kind of like Hotmail as well. Those are like websites where when you see that, you just kind of like go, oh man, that's old, dude. And you just don't really feel any need to go back to it, you know?
I think Hotmail is owned by Microsoft now.
Yeah.
It's merged into Outlook, right?
I think so, yeah.
And then AOL is Verizon?
Is it? Really?
I think so. And I think Yahoo's also owned by Verizon. So I think those two companies are merged, maybe. I'm not entirely 100% sure about that. But I feel like I know they're definitely both owned by Verizon.
Interesting. Huh. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So if you want to go to Verizon, Yahoo's an option.
Yeah. right. I think with that, I think we're going to take a short break and we'll see you guys in a few minutes. All right. Hey guys, welcome back. We're done with our break and we're ready to move on to the next topic. So recently the Xbox, like the original Xbox and Windows NT 3.5 source code were both leaked online. And I think it's pretty cool that, well, it's cool, but it's not cool because it's not super legal, but a lot of stuff has been being leaked online for source code wise. Like we had the Source Engine code leak a while ago. And then recently we had like quite a few Nintendo console like OS stuff leaked. So like the Wii's BIOS and like N64 stuff, I think. And now we have the Xbox. I don't know. Like, do you think there's a reason why this is like having an uptick in like activity? Because it's, I don't know. I don't feel like hackers really went for this kind of stuff before, or at least there weren't that many leaks online of this kind of stuff, you know?
I'm kind of curious if like where the source code is coming from. Like, so it's being leaked by somebody, which means it's probably someone who had access to it of some sort, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same with the Nintendo stuff, too.
I actually do know where the Nintendo stuff apparently came from, which is actually kind of fascinating. So China had like really restrictive gaming laws. So Nintendo couldn't just sell an N64 out there. They had to produce a special version. So they made a line of like basically every console, and every Nintendo console had a different version of it released in China that went under the name IQ. So like that is apparently where most of the source code came from for that leak, was someone who was working for someone who made the IQ consoles. They just took the info and they leaked it online. So, IQ is pretty... Oh, sorry, go on.
Okay, no, go ahead.
Oh, no. IQ is kind of fascinating to me because, like, there's a lot of design differences sometimes, and then sometimes there's literally none. Because, like, the N64, they fixed the controller. So, like, it looks kind of more like a modern controller. They just moved the thumbstick to where the D-pad is on the controller, and then they moved the D-pad down.
That's hilarious.
But then, the Game Boy SP looks literally the exact same. It just has a little IQ logo on it instead of Nintendo. Really weird. Really weird. And, of course, these are all modified to only play certain games that were, like, checked by the Chinese government to make sure that they were eligible to play. Which means that these are also, like, collector's edition items nowadays.
That's actually really funny. Now, I'm not too aware if... Microsoft is doing the same thing, but
I actually don't know. Yeah,
that'd be interesting if Microsoft had like a secret company in China to try to get the Xbox out there. But I'm kind of curious what this is kind of gonna do for the what would you call them? Not the DIY community, but the sort of the code the emulation community, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Like homebrew and stuff.
Like so. Kind of the good example of WoW on this one is basically the fact that nobody can use this code directly, right? That seems to be the understanding, and Microsoft will sue the crap out of you should you even approach it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But theoretically, you could reverse engineer the code. Now that, you know, the source code has kind of been laid out bare for you, you can kind of reverse engineer the parts that maybe you were struggling with before to build your own version of, like, let's say the old Xbox, for example.
Yeah,
I guess, right?
Yeah, and I do think that that's going to come out of this, like, since no one can use the actual code, it's going to take a while, because I don't think anyone really wants to get sued. So, but I do think that this will lead to better emulation, especially of some consoles. Like, I don't think we're going to get perfect emulation anytime soon, because, like, that's just going to be hard in general. But it's going to be interesting to see, like, what happens because of this. I seriously do think that there will be an uptick in, like, quality and compatibility and stuff, you know?
I mean, I was going to say, when all the Nintendo Wii source code got leaked, somebody recreated, or not particularly with the Wii, but I think it was one of their consoles, somebody actually recreated one of the original Mario games using that source code, which, of course, Nintendo promptly then took down and I assume is now legally going after the person who posted it, or the team that posted it. But there, somewhere out there on the internet, there is now a emulation of Mario using the original source code that, of course, runs near perfectly because it's using the source code.
Right.
So that's kind of neat.
It is.
And I'm not too familiar of any, I guess, super classic games that came out on the Xbox. I didn't have an original Xbox.
Yeah, same.
Maybe Halo?
The original Halo definitely came out in here on the Xbox. I think there were some other ones probably as well. I just didn't have an Xbox. I had an Xbox 360. That was the first console I owned. So that was a few years after the Xbox came out.
Yeah. And then also alongside, we didn't mention this, but there was also Windows NT 3.5 source code that got leaked.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And for the uninitiated, such as myself, who just read what that actually is, it's basically like, it was Windows, but I don't want to call it like a beta version of Windows, but that's kind of what it was. Like, it was, the acronym used to stand for new technology. Essentially, it was Windows with all the newest stuff basically crammed in, like 32-bit at the time, because it was 2001. So that was considered like new technology at the time, 32-bit. But that is officially leaked, and while NT is no longer with us, obviously, it also is linked to several other Windows projects, such as the ARM project of Windows that runs on ARM CPUs specifically. So there could be issues with that down the line for Microsoft if that got leaked and it's reverse engineered for somebody else. There is a group of coders who are trying to put together a open source Windows, basically. Like, have you heard of this, Patrick?
I actually haven't, no.
So, I don't remember the exact name. I feel like it's like Windows Remix or something like that. But it is literally just Windows. But it looks like it's a really old version of Windows that was in alpha stage. And it's this group of coders who have line by line gone through the Microsoft code and just reverse engineered every line so that they're basically building Windows from the ground up with their own code. So it is entirely legal, but like, it's been in alpha for 20 years now, 30 years maybe.
Holy smokes, really?
Yeah, like, it's this really, really, it's a cool project. And to be clear, it's like amazing and you should look it up, but don't use it. It's just not usable.
Yeah.
But this could potentially help them because the source code is out there now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're specifically targeting NT 3.5, right? It
no.
Sounds like they're targeting something else. But I think it's still pretty neat since, like, I value, like, preservation of stuff for a while. So, this kind of allows it to be preserved, you know? So, like, since even though you can't run the code, someone will make it so where you can run it, and then we have the closest thing to having a running server rack with Windows NT 3.5. Someone wants to do that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is interesting, and it's almost a little bit, maybe not coincidental, but it's a little weird that this is sort of all these different console stuff is getting leaked at the same time.
Yeah.
Like all Nintendo stuff, all of Xbox. I'm expecting next week we're gonna see the entire PlayStation catalog get leaked in some way, the source code for their old PlayStations.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what's happening and why it's happening so frequently, but I mean, I can't really say that I'm against it. I mean, again, we do not encourage.
We don't condone you to go steal source code, but.
But it is interesting as someone who likes to preserve things to see that someone is doing this.
Yes. I agree with that as well.
Yeah. because it's like things can easily get lost to time, and we won't. And sometimes, like, it's kind of, I think, common practice in some industries. Like, you go back and you look at older things and you figure out how they were able to surpass different things, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, you like extrapolate, like, oh, they did this thing, so we can implement that into our own code. That sort of logic.
I mean, right? I was going to say, look at possibly one of the largest open source projects that is the most widespread. Look at Chromium, for example.
Ah, that is true.
Yeah, like Chromium, for anyone that doesn't know, it is what Google Chrome is built on. Also, at this point, Microsoft Edge, as well as I think most browsers at this point, outside of Safari and Firefox, I think everything is built on Chromium, which is just this massive catalog of code that builds the web browser you know as Chrome. But it also could be used, you can kind of use things from there to modify it in a way to make, like, if you were making your own browser, you can make it actually stand out, but using Chromium stuff. So
yeah,
but that's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, speaking about, like, Windows, did you hear about Windows Get, I think? WinGet?
How many in our audience are Linux users?
Oh, yeah, because this is if you're a Linux user, this is going to sound really, really, really familiar. It's an app database, essentially. It's an installer for different things, which, if WinGet sounds familiar, it's because it's AppGet, but Windows.
Yeah.
So for those who don't use Linux, AppGet on Linux is essentially a code that you can run to go to, I don't know, is it like a database?
Yeah. What a lot of Linux app developers will do, because some of them don't want to sit down and create a installer package for every single one of their applications. A lot of times they'll basically put what is equivalent of like a GitHub stack of code online, and then you essentially tell your terminal, which is Linux's command prompt. If you don't use Linux, it's command prompt essentially, to literally tell it to get the application from the code, and it basically just assembles the code in your terminal to then run as an application on your computer. I think I very much oversimplified what the actual line of code does, but I think for our purposes, it's probably a decent explanation.
That's probably good enough, yeah. But yeah, no, so Windows is now having that, and it's interesting because they have a lot of, like, this seems very close to what AppGet is, because when you install stuff off of that, that's how you, like, install Python, and, like, I think you can install, I forget what it was, but there's another dependency thing that I had to install. Like, I think you can install, like, CMake off of there.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Those essential core things that most people, like, that, like, I would personally need,
mm-hmm.
like, in order to make something off of GitHub or to code in Python, you would go to there. Similarly, this WinGet thing has a lot of similar things, like, they have 7-Zip in there. I saw earlier when I was looking through them just to see what they had, I saw that they had CMake in here as well.
So a lot of, like, open source stuff, it almost sounds like.
Yeah, I think it is a lot of open source stuff. And I mean, it's interesting to see what they have, because there's a lot, right? But it just kind of harkens back to, you know, the AppGet, right?
So it is a little bit interesting because we talked about this a little bit before we actually started the episode, but Microsoft owns GitHub. And again, a little bit for the uninitiated, GitHub is a massive platform where a lot of developers put their code on there. They put entire branches of code. Basically, that's where a lot of open source applications get built. And Microsoft owns GitHub as of, I believe, its last year. So it's not crazy to think maybe this whole WinGet thing, because as we said before, AppGet on Linux essentially goes to the database that these developers have put together so that you can just download the application through AppGet, and then it runs on your computer. My theory is that WinGet is maybe the way to push GitHub developers to maybe start orienting their applications towards Windows more, and then you can just use the package manager to install it straight from GitHub, is my thought process. But
yeah, I kind of have to agree with some of that. I mean, I don't think it's to encourage them to develop for Windows. I mean, they're doing that anyways because of how popular Windows is as a, you know, OS system. But I do think it's trying to get GitHub developers to, instead of just using GitHub on Linux, to start using it on Windows. Because as someone who uses Linux a lot, apt-get is like very easy to use and very convenient. Especially if you need to install like a dependency. So let's say like if you install like a game on your computer, normally that needs like Microsoft.NET 4 or whatever, right?
Oh my
goodness. So it has to install that in order for the game to run. And like that's called like a dependency. And so if you need to install dependencies on Linux, you can just do like sudo apt-get install whatever you need, which basically just means as an admin, install this application from the repository of things that they have online. This sounds like it's going to function exactly like that, which means that it could be that they're just trying to get Linux users to start going more towards Microsoft again as their all-in-one sort of coding platform instead of using Linux.
I mean, it is kind of interesting because right now they're only supporting the, I would call them the Microsoft standard program launchers, which is EXE, MSIX, and MSI, which basically those three can only be opened on Windows devices, or like a emulator that is running Windows, essentially. So
yeah,
I don't know. It is interesting, and with them owning GitHub now, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to make, so Linux for the past few years has been the coding platform because of just how open Linux's terminal is and their libraries are, and you know, your ability to install, as you were saying, pretty much any libraries you need or any dependencies you need, you could do that straight from the terminal. It would be interesting if Windows started becoming the platform of choice again, just because Microsoft seems like they're more than willing to give the tools. And in my opinion, maybe a lot easier for people who aren't ready to jump into the whole Linux adventure.
Yeah, I think that might be it too, honestly. Because from what I've experienced in just doing programming and stuff for college, is like a lot of people either code on Windows. I mean, they code on the main three, like Windows, Mac, or Linux. But I feel like there's less and less people coding on Linux that aren't just kind of like already kind of techie people.
Right.
And instead of people are coding instead on like Windows and Mac OS. And so, I mean, they might just be trying to, Windows might just be trying to get those Linux people to just go to Windows OS for some reason. Right. And I mean, it's interesting because Linux just has a really good workflow, I think, once you get into like coding and stuff and like trying to install applications on Linux. There's a workflow that goes into it, you know? There's like a flow, and it's like really easy, convenient. You don't have to open up like a bunch of web browser tabs or anything. You just open up a terminal command prompt, you open up your coding program of sorts, and you're good to go there. I mean, the same on Windows, but I think they're just trying to make it more like Linux, makes any sense.
Yeah, so I'm curious, since you're a person who does coding here and there a little bit, if you were to look at what it looks like Microsoft's trying to do with the Winget thing, what would you need to switch back to Windows as your coding platform?
Well, for starters, I don't use Windows in general because my laptop, it doesn't deal very well with high load usages, I guess, right?
Oh, right.
And Windows is a very, very resource-hungry OS. They have a lot of bloat in there sometimes, and it's just not necessary for me to work, which is the main reason why I use Linux. If they reduce the overall like resource-hungry nature of Windows, I would come back, probably. Maybe. I've gotten very used to Linux, and so it might be hard for me to switch back to Windows for anything other than what I'm currently using it for, which is like specific applications. Like when I recorded the podcast, I have to record on Windows because my Linux partition, something happens with recording stuff longer than 15 minutes and Audacity just dies. So like I have specific use cases for Windows. And I mean, I don't really see a reason why I wouldn't just use Windows for specific use cases at this point.
I see. Okay, so at this point, it's kind of like you've kind of separated Windows as being a general use to more of a edge case type, this will work on Windows for sure type thing.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason why I've been like that is just because Linux has a, like, once you kind of get into the flow of Linux and you're used to typing stuff in terminal and you're used to Googling stuff because something doesn't work and then you just copy paste what the people say to copy paste in, well, like, once you kind of get used to that, like, you kind of might have to repair something, but normally it's fine. It's a lot easier to use Linux, in my opinion. Like, I don't recommend everyone to just go and install like Linux Void or anything. I mean, I use Ubuntu, so I'm not, I have a very hands-off Linux OS, right? It's not super intricate or I have to do everything myself. A lot of it's handled by the OS. But I seriously do think that Linux is in some ways better than Windows. Yeah, I mean, which is, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, I was going to say, I love Linux for everything it can do. And as you said, it's just so light on hardware compared to Windows. The only other one I would say is maybe more optimized is macOS. And that's only because it's optimized for very specific hardware. It doesn't work across the board like Linux does a lot of the time. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely... I don't know if I want to say it's not the best OS. That's a hard thing to say. I think, you, as you said, a lot of the OSs are very good at what they do. Mm-hmm. But like, if I could use Linux on a daily, I think that would be amazing. The issue I often run into is there happens to be one thing that doesn't work. A big thing for me with Windows in particular, back when I used to use Windows, was... the fact that it could run games, which any other OS you use to run games, you're an insane person. Like, that's just, not to insult anybody, but gaming is Windows. That is.
Well, I do think some of that is changing over time with Steam's Proton and yes. Like wide improving, but still, it is very tedious and time consuming to get things to work. Even stuff that is very, very simple.
Right.
It is a bit of an issue.
Right. Yeah. And for most people, I consider myself a fairly tech-savvy person, and so is Patrick, and even there's some issues that are just such a pain in the butt to fix, that at the end of the day, you kind of have to ask, is it worth the time to fix? And for a lot of the average person who uses a computer, I would almost argue that for them, it's almost an unsolvable issue without going to somebody who kind of understands what they're already getting into.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That tends to be the bigger issue for me, is I just don't want to put the time into making Linux work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, same. Like, yeah. Like, especially for games. Some games don't have any support. No one's ever tried putting them on Linux. And I don't know how to do that. So it's just not worth it for me to only run Linux on a computer, right?
Right. And I was going to say, even with your recording issue, you probably, if you... did look around, you could probably find the solution for that, but at the end of the day, how is that worth your time of looking to find that one solution to that weird edge case problem?
Yeah, instead exactly of just using Windows. Like, no, it's not really worth my time. And I think that is something that, I think you hit on a good point. Like, Linux is for people who don't really value their time, I guess.
Oof.
And that's coming from someone who's using Linux. Like, if you, well... you do value your time, obviously, but it's how you spend it, I guess. Because for some people, we're okay spending time fixing dumb bugs or whatever that's happening on our computers. I'm fine having to figure out how to reboot Pulse Audio for the 10th time because my audio stopped working. You know, that sort of thing. Like, I'm fine trying to figure out how to do that stuff. It's just, it is very time consuming. And there's no guarantee that you will get it back up and running, right?
Yeah, and I mean, and as we were saying earlier, there's for the average person, it might be very difficult for them to fix in the first place, even if they have the time to do it. Like,
yeah.
And that, yeah.
I mean, you also, if you look stuff up, you also have to put a lot of, you have to put a lot of faith and trust into them to make sure that what they're telling you to do isn't malicious or anything. I mean, that's not to say that a lot of the people are like that. Almost none of the things I've seen for Linux at all ever are like that. But it's like
it just
someone
takes
who doesn't know, you know?
Yeah, and it just takes one, too.
Yeah. It just takes one person to do something and just ruin it for everyone. And then it's just hard to trust people again, you know?
Yeah.
And again, not saying that that's happened. It has probably happened in the past and it will happen again. But personally, I have not experienced that. Every single response I've seen is in very good faith. And if it ruins someone's computer, I don't think they were intending that. And there's something there, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, for as bloated as Windows is, there are ways to make it better. Is it a pain? And again, that's kind of going down the route of, do you have the time to make Windows actually better? And are you willing to put the time into making Windows better? Like, not to say Windows is a bad OS. It is by far the most used OS, but it's also Windows. So, you know.
Yeah, like, do you really want to put the time into this? Yeah. I think with that, no. I think I'm going to... The end.
Yeah.
We've hit the end of the podcast. I think we've hit about an hour-ish. I'm not 100% certain on that. But,
Should, I'm going to go a little... Before you end it, we should We should have just a whole podcast of us talking about Linux.
You know, I'd be okay with that. One of these times, we got to do that. Just talk, discuss, like,
Linux.
Maybe different flavors of Linux and all that stuff. But that's another topic for another time, I guess.
But, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening. Please make sure you check us out on our socials. We have a Reddit, a Facebook. I think we have a Twitter.
We do. So we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I actually forgot about Reddit. I have not advertised. We do have a Reddit as well.
We do. It's not super set up yet. We haven't really done anything fancy yet. But it's a work in progress.
And I promise I will post more on them or find a way to post better. Like, I haven't posted in the past 2 weeks, but we'll get back to that. It's totally my bad. We'll do it. But follow us on all that stuff and then subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
Yep.
I think that's everything we have probably. I'm probably missing something. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. All right, well. Again, thank you guys for listening. Trish, do you have anything else you want to say?
Nope. I think I got everything.
All right. Well, make sure to tune in next week for the next episode of this podcast. Thanks again. See ya.
Bye.